All right, guys, welcome back to the next podcast for March with our topic about finances. We're going to be focusing a little bit more on maybe like finances of the family, just budgeting, maybe having
more application-esque,
just really diving into practical steps you can take when it comes to being faithful with our finances. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, as we start most of these podcasts, we're going to hit you with a little bit of stats to kind of give some idea of what is happening around you so you can kind of understand where you stand in that process.
You're not alone in this, right?
Yeah. So about 22% of Americans have less than $5,000 saved for retirement, and 15% have no retirement savings at all.
Has someone been looking in my bank account?
I remember during the height of the pandemic, we saw some graph that was showing like the collective savings of Americans, and like every month it was slowly going down and down, and then like it was projecting like in 3 months there'd be no savings in anyone's accounts.
Right.
Of course, that doesn't happen, but it was like interesting to see just how quickly it goes from yeah, we're doing okay to oh no, I can't afford a Big Mac right now.
Right.
But so that, you know, whether you are 25, 55, or 95, you know, budgeting affects you differently, but it's never too early to start thinking about this kind of stuff.
So we used to have a client in the capital investment world, and I mean, it's very common on a lot of these capital investment websites and companies that you need $500,000 liquid to start an account with them.
I can't count that high.
And so I was telling a friend of mine that, and he looked at me like, yeah.
And?
Yeah, and? I'm like, I get it. I'm a loser. I don't have $500,000 liquid. Okay, I got you. You're living large.
I'll go sit at the kids' table.
Right. I'm like, and then it was decades ago. The boss, I was working at a design company, and my boss is like, you know, oh, yeah, you know, there's a bunch of people out there making, you know, $500,000 or more a year kind of thing. This is in New Orleans. And I told him, I don't think that's that. Maybe in your circles, maybe, mm-hmm. that might be the case. But I don't think that. In the room that we're in with you, no one but you is making that.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives you a little sample, a little survey, a little focus group of that stat. So when I hear that, I can imagine that. Not only do we struggle with the ability to, but I think we struggle with the desire to as well.
Right. Well, I think it's so easy to be like, there's always the bigger fish. There's always someone making more than you. There's always someone with a bigger house, nicer yard, nicer car, whatever.
Sure.
And to look at what meager things you have and take those for granted sometimes. So.
Yeah, I think the principles of a good Christian budget, you know, aligning your biblical spending habits is probably the first thing we should look at. And like we said in the last one, you know, show me your checkbook and I'll show you your heart.
Right.
Now, if ends are overlapping, and not just meeting, they're overlapping, you're not sweating any of this here.
Yeah.
The $500,000 guy. He's not sweating that money. But someone else, like myself, would be like, okay, well, what do I need to do to be a good steward with God's resources? And so I think the role of contentment also in budgeting is also something that people struggle with, that I don't think people get a high or happy just seeing maybe the amount in their savings account go up.
Mm.
And like, no one sees that. I'd rather walk around with a $2,000 watch,
right,
or $500 shoes, because I can show that off. My savings account, that's boring. That's like buying a piece of your vehicle that you can't see, instead of buying like new rims or tires or a new paint job kind of thing.
A lot of people that I've met later in life, I see they have a direct connection between perception of how other people view how much money they have and their worth.
Yes.
Whether that is factual of, yep, they got 500,000, like you said, or they have less, but it's all about perception of, I want other people to view I'm well off. And that comes out in different flavors of, I'm going to spend a lot more money than I need to in this area. I'm going to get the nicest thing, the newest phone, new jewelry every week kind of thing. And even if you have the means, like if I had ends overlapping, your budget's going to look different, but there's still a budget, right? Like, sure. You know, making sure that the wealth that you have is being distributed where it needs to be.
Yeah.
And not in in fruitless endeavors of, you know, I'm going to go make sure my grass is the greenest grass on the entire block.
Sure.
When I can be putting aside money for my child's college or the church's endeavors in Myanmar or whatever kind of thing. So, like you said, budgeting is not the sexy thing to do, but it definitely helps, I think. And like you said, it's difficult, I think, when you just see numbers going up because there's no like understanding of what that can relate to.
Sure.
You're just like, oh, cool. It went from 10 to 12. Awesome. I guess that's cool kind of thing. But like, you know, I know it helps me understand like, okay, that is diapers for my future children. Right. That is, you know, the tires for the minivan in a couple years. Sure. Like trying to attach that to what that looks like financially for you and your family, I think helps a lot so that you're not thinking, oh, it's only just $200 more. It's like, well, that thing could be this in the future.
So obviously that number in the bank account is going to depend upon where you are in your age, right? Mm-hmm. So like you're thinking about trying to have children this year. That money you see, like, well, it's diapers, minivan, whatever kind of thing. In my age bracket, I'll use two words you probably have not heard me say, estate planning. And so we're talking with some friends. And they're like, oh, yeah, we bought our plots. And it was like $32,000 for two. And I didn't include everything. And I'm like, is your coffin air conditioned or something? Is there a butler that comes with it? What in the world is driving that price? And so we've spent some time the last like week or two just looking at prices of, if there's anything more morbid and boring is pricing your coffins and stuff. Like,
do you price match this plot over here?
I got a coupon.
Buy one, get one free.
What if I only like squinched up real tiny? I get a small one. So there was a gentleman in a small group that, and we've kind of talked to that before about, he was very much into, his love language was things. Mm. And he took us on a tour of his basement. And I just saw a video of a similar kind of thing. And this one was called, how many TVs do I have? This dude went around his, I guess you call it man cave. Mm-hmm. And it was maxed out. He had 17 flat screen TVs in his basement. There were things all over. I mean, it was done up. Mm-hmm. If you probably added up the cost of this man cave, you're looking at probably $1 million with everything you had.
I'm just thinking that 17 TVs alone is expensive.
17 TVs. And none of them were like, I mean, there's no 30 and 40 inch TV. Mm-hmm. This was like 75 and above.
Goodness.
The biggest one was 120 inch, I think it was.
That's just the size of the wall.
Right, right. And so, you know, we look at that extreme and the opulence that comes with something like that, and you're like, do they have like millions in the bank? Mm. Au contraire. So that gentleman that took us on a tour of his basement, his marriage was falling apart, on fire. He just was not focused on that. Mm. He's more focused on the material stuff. And so it wound up costing his marriage. And so as we tend to kind of look at some things that can come out of money, like you heard in our last podcast, we wanted to give some tools that may help. There, I went and looked at some some apps. Hmm. And I asked you off camera which one do you use, because I'm pretty sure I know, and I had a hot breaking news here on the Uncommon Podcast. I said, do you use the Mint app? He said, oh, yeah, I love that. I said, well, you know what? It's shutting down March of 2024. He said, what? Apparently, it was bought out by another company. And so, but there are plenty of apps out there. One is YNAB. It's called You Need a Budget. I thought I listed it just because of that name. That's I have no idea name. If it's any good or not. But there are things like Good Budget and Every Dollar, mm-hmm. as well as that one we mentioned before called Rocket Money, mm-hmm. that measures, are you paying for something you don't know you are? Could you cancel this? You have two Netflix accounts, on and on, right? So, you know, go look for an app or start a budget. Even if you're old school, get a pen and a paper out, do all your, mm-hmm. list all your things. You will be shocked at some of the things you're paying for, mm-hmm. or at least those around you will be shocked at what you're paying for. Like, how much do you pay on your hair?
Yeah.
I mean, I get it. I don't have any, so I haven't bought shampoo in a long time. But when you look at your expenses, try to see them for what they are and say, wow, that's a lot of money we're spending on this or that.
Yeah, I think that really seeing that, and for me, I'm a very visual person, so using Mint was very helpful just because I was able to see the line going up and down, and then the pie chart of like, well, here's my income, here's my outcome, or, you know, expenditures, and here's kind of that broken down into different levels. Seeing like, okay, so how much did we spend on restaurants and out to eat? How much are we spending on groceries? Now, obviously, there's areas where you have zero control. Mortgage, rent, utilities, that kind of stuff. But when I look at it and go, okay, so how many times did we go out to eat in the month of January?
Sure.
Okay, so that, you know, 'cause it adds up after a while, especially if you're not keeping track of it. I think that keeping track of it is sobering, but it makes, when you feel like you have the control over it, I think it becomes a little less daunting. And knowing is half the battle. I think
G.I. Joe said that.
Just any kind of budgeting software, and obviously this list is very non-exhaustive. There's plenty out there because they know we need help budgeting. I think Bank of America has a budget thing in it, because that's where I see it. Right. So
it'll say, you know, you're spending, you know.
We should adjust your out-to-eat budget.
$1,400 a week on coffee.
Yeah.
You very gingerly. You may want to adjust your spending habits.
Right.
Versus like the guy from Scrubs. With the person that yells mistake every time he tries to make one, you know, like mistake. Right. There are no shortage of tools to use.
But you got to use them.
And we struggle with that, obviously. So our verse this segment is Proverbs. Going to the old school.
Old school.
Proverbs 22:7.
The rich rules over the poor. And the borrower is the slave of the lender.
Oof. Ouch. Sound like our government. Hey-oh. If you know me, I'm zero political. So me staying that right there. That's the one political statement I'll say for the whole year. I'm done. Let's see what it's...
I've met the quota.
Yep. February 7th. I'm done for the year. Whew. All right. Before we take our break, we want to mention to you about our memberships. Mm-hmm. So if you don't know, and we've been mentioning different resources... and the different segments, because we get asked sometimes, do you have this? Do you have that? So our memberships range from monthly, yearly, and lifetime. And there are different tiers as far as prices, as well as what comes with. And they help the individual. Mm-hmm. Like, so you're not part of a small group, or a men's ministry is not very active, or you just need some one-on-one. Mm-hmm. This is a great resource because we have, you know, originals and workbooks and conversation starters and books on a ton of topics. And so I think right now the membership range from $9 a month, the $49 a year, and $149 for a lifetime. So you can check those out, see which one fits your needs. At uncommon.org, and be sure to listen to some of the generous sponsors in our segment. InCommon would like to thank today's sponsor.
At Sterling Technology Solutions, our mission is to help businesses in North Carolina maximize their profitability and success through our innovative managed IT services.
Okay, welcome to our second segment of our podcast focusing on some finances. This was around debt, savings, and trusting God. Mm-hmm. And so one of the pain points is navigating the challenges of debt and saving while keeping faith in God's provision. Mm-hmm. You know, the average American household carries about $137,000 of debt. Now, the biggest culprit of that, obviously, is your mortgage, right? Mm-hmm. And that's probably low. That seems low. Right now, think of a mortgage. You may owe a couple of $100,000 on this house.
I think I saw the average median house was about $400,000, I think.
Right. So that number seems very low. But that number includes, obviously, a range. His mortgages, credit cards, loans, and other forms of debt. Mm. So just the credit card debt. Let's focus in on a couple of things here. Credit card debt average exceeds $6,000 for households per month. That is a large taco.
Yeah, that's a vacation right there. Goodness.
Not at Disney World.
No.
Not anymore. That's not at Disney World.
You can pass by Disney World for that kind of cash. Right, exactly. Wade and Mickey.
So we kind of talked off camera about, so what do you do when you're in debt? Mm-hmm. Let's not say it's bad debt, right? You bought a house. Mm-hmm. You got a mortgage. You went to school. You may have gone to a two-year or four-year. Whatever reasons you chose either, you came out and you have, let's just say, $40,000 of debt that is now on you to pay back.
Yeah.
How in the world do you deal with that? It feels like a burden that is going to be there for the next 15, 20, 30 years.
Yeah.
How does that make you feel?
Yeah, I mean, I think I was very blessed that we didn't have any student loans with myself, but my wife came in or got out of college, and when we got married, came with a package deal, her and the $30,000 of student debt.
You got the bonus back.
And I think that was a little daunting for me, because especially someone coming into the picture of like, I have no debt, to be like, well, congratulations, you get a wife and $30,000 of debt.
Right.
Having to talk through, like, okay, so what does that look like monthly? Mm. How much do we need to be setting aside? How much do we have to exceed that to kind of like pay off interest and that kind of stuff? Especially in my situation, it was a little bit more blindsided because we weren't quite sure how much was being given to us loan-wise near the end. But it was very, very stressful. I mean, being newly married and going out on our own, being our own on a house and all the utilities with that and health insurance, all this kind of stuff, that was like all the firsts. It was it was really terrifying because I have a friend who he's still dealing with his student loans, and he was able to, you know, not having the interest rate build up during COVID, and unfortunately wasn't able to do any payments during that time frame, and now they're kind of coming back to bite him, and all those interest rates come back full swing back in October, and unfortunately, because he didn't put anything down, it's still the same amount it was, and he wasn't able to take advantage of that. So, I mean, this is a very common scenario of student loan debt.
Sure.
So that in itself is difficult because it's in a time frame, we're talking about this, you were very young, you're making decisions that are life altering, that you have very little knowledge in that field, yet you still have to make those decisions. And so, you know, there's a reason that they try, you know, talk about budgeting a lot in school. They should do it more and more practical. Mm-hmm. But they mentioned that, I think that it's because of these scenarios here that budgeting out for student loan debt and that kind of stuff. But on the other side of the coin, we also dealt with medical debt with my wife's health issues. And that felt a little more terrifying.
Sure.
Because that came with the health issues as well as the medical debt. And nothing is more terrifying than insurance.
Oh,
I swear. The amount of time I spent on the phone trying to talk to people, trying to figure out how much am I going to owe you, and getting the resounding, we all know. across the board. It was crazy. But the best piece of advice I ever got during those time frames of debt was, we're going to eat that elephant a bite at a time.
Yeah.
It's just breaking it up, budgeting out. Even if it's something as small as $100, just putting that money down and trying to eat that away. It may be there for decades. I know people, right. we knew a family where the dad was a brain surgeon, mm-hmm. and he was still dealing with school debt, and he had two children that were both in high school.
Yeah, it was 14 years after he graduated med school. I think he was either a heart surgeon or a brain surgeon. Put it this way, he's doing very well.
Right.
In student loans up to his eyeballs.
Yeah. So you're not alone out there, definitely. And just because you are a heart/brain/rocket scientist or a rocket surgeon.
A rocket surgeon, even more.
You know, it doesn't negate student loans. So it can be very daunting, and it will swallow you whole if you focus down on it.
Yeah, I think one of the things that helps with a mortgage for a house is that once it starts, that's the hardest thing. Mm. When you jump out of a plane with a parachute, you might as well enjoy the ride down because you've already made the decision.
Yeah.
Once you're out of the plane. So when my family and I went through Hurricane Katrina, and as we were evacuating, it got to be that time of the month where we had to pay a bill, a mortgage. Mm-hmm. And people were talking on the news or like, you know, oh, well, maybe banks will suspend the payments for a little bit, kind of add them onto the back end, that kind of thing. That wasn't my bank telling me that. That was like the news reporter, mm-hmm. you know, Jessica on Channel 4 thinking that or suggesting that. And so I can vividly remember it. I can't even tell you the town we were in. We were basically on the run. We were evacuating actively.
Yeah.
The storm was off the coast. Mm. We were somewhere between Baton Rouge and New Orleans. And we stopped in some town, wrote a check, and mailed it into a mailbox on the street, hoping that the hurricane would not take this mailbox and fling it to like Oklahoma someplace. But we made that payment. And I'm glad we did, as surreal as that was, because our bank was like, oh no, you still owe that money. Because it's kind of like Mardi Gras, right? When you're in New Orleans, and we're from New Orleans, obviously, and Mardi Gras is coming up, it's next Tuesday. When you're in New Orleans, it's Mardi Gras, Fat Tuesday. When you're outside of Louisiana, you know what it is?
It's Tuesday. It's Skinny Tuesday.
Just Tuesday. Yeah, Skinny Tuesday. So this is kind of thing that, you know, while Louisiana and some of the areas nearby were going through this, the rest of the country was not.
Yeah.
And it's just business as usual. So you're like, no, sir, you still owe that payment. And there were many people out there who did not pay that and, it, you know, had late fees and, you know, foreclosures mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. I say that to say, most of the time when you're paying your mortgage, it's just a payment. And you are not focused. You're not watching the grass grow, right? You're just kind of like, let's just make our payment every month. And all of a sudden, a decade later, you look up, you're like, okay, we've made some progress. Mm-hmm. And then like 1,000 years go by, you're like, oh, look, I made a little more progress. You never want to look at the printout. They show you like what your money goes to.
Oh, yeah, no.
Because it doesn't get like happy until like the last like 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
Everything else is like all the bankers are happy.
Yes.
First 20. So avoiding the bondage of debt and seeking wisdom, right? So saving on purpose. Balancing saving for the future and trusting God's provision, I think mm-hmm. is a good thing because, you know, the rich fool, look at our last podcast, that guy was, well, I got all this stuff. I need a bigger barn.
Yeah.
It's like, well, today, your soul is required of you.
Yeah.
I feel a little bad that, well, if you're saving for retirement, I mean, are you the rich fool? Mm. You know, I think that there's a balance there.
Yeah.
And so navigating financial decisions with prayer and wisdom. And like I said before, you and I, or everybody listening, we'll always have debt. Mm-hmm. You won't always have that money in the bank to pay that debt. So sometimes seeking God, the counsel, doing some research, finding some wisdom that, you know what, maybe I just need to stay the course, pay that over time, because having $20,000 in the bank is not easily replaced. Mm. It might make you feel good that you've got that debt off of you. You're like, whew, now I'm debt free. Mm-hmm. 16 months later, you're like, oh, I'm in debt again. But you don't have the $20,000 in the bank to do that. So right. I think also not being emotional about it and not trying to be envious.
Yeah.
Because like you said, there's always a bigger fish out there. Mm-hmm. There's always somebody, you know, making a lot more than you. This time about where you are, make good decisions. And so. Right.
Yeah, well, and we talked about this in the previous one, and this applies from every conversation we've had on this podcast. It's a hard thing.
Sure.
You know, making sure that you're making good decisions, you're budgeting for the debt, not adding to it frivolously kind of thing. And just being very conscious of it. Because I know plenty of guys that finances is like, well, I'm not really going to look at anything. And we're just going to hope at the end of the month that we're good. And this is not a, like, you can't see me with my eyes closed kind of thing.
Right.
So, you know, being financially savvy is one thing. But just having a good idea of how you want to handle finances. And, you know, looking at that through the, you know, the Bible lens that we've been talking about. And even seeking wisdom outside of that. I mean, there's plenty of financial people out there you can talk to, friends, family,
sure.
professionals, and that kind of thing. So there's definitely resources out there and courses you can take. But this is not a problem that just fixes itself and you wake up one day and the government steps in and says, you know what? We felt bad, so we're just going to take your debt away kind of thing. Right. So you have to take that step and really work towards either, clearing your debt or saving or budgeting or whatever the case may be. And, looking at the steps that we've outlined here and, other resources out there and, being a good steward with our money and providing for those around us.
Yeah. And, don't think that we're saying you need to have $3 million when you retire.
Right.
Or in the bank to feel like you're doing well. That's not what we're saying. This is a heart condition kind of thing. Because if you spend any time the Facebook or TikTok millionaires you run across with these side hustles, like anybody can make like $600,000, and they'll point to the green screen behind them. So if that was the case, then our stat of carrying debt would be incorrect.
Right.
So I think it's important for us to keep in mind that this is a heart condition, every bit of a money condition. And so our verse is Proverbs 3:9-10.
Honor the Lord with your wealth and with the first fruits of all your produce.
So this reminds me of Cain and Abel. Cain brought some. Abel brought his best. And there was consequences for that. There was jealousy. There was murder. Even God noticed that that wasn't the first fruits. And so we've talked in the last one about giving out of sacrifice and giving out of abundance. And so, again, it's a heart condition. So as we move on to our next segment, we want to mention our originals.
Yes.
We've been touching on different resources for you through Uncommon. This is our originals. It's a deep dive into a single topic. And I'm trying to think, do we have one on money? I'm trying to think if we have one that focuses on that.
We have several originals that touch on the first year of marriage and first year of parenting, which touch on the financial aspect of that. But I don't believe we have one solely on finances, at least not yet. You may see that coming.
Oh, hello. Apparently there's a need for something on finances. I mean, there's some that talk about, like communication and you're like you said, the first year of marriage, commitment, that kind of thing. But yeah, there's a need, I think, for us to develop something like that. So now there we have articles on this for sure,
definitely.
But originals, we'll do one of those. Hmm. And so as we move into our next segment, be sure to listen to our generous sponsors who have given with their heart. Uncommon would like to thank today's sponsor.
Cole & Company looks to impact the lives of all they touch so they can discover their greatest potential. They seek to coach clients to clarity and reach their version of success. Visit them at cole-cpa.com.
All right, welcome back to our last segment of our finance podcast. I feel like we need to have like a book or some kind of program on finances. We're talking about this so much. We do not. We do not have that. No. But we are focusing in this segment on investing in God's kingdom, mm-hmm. which I thought was a nice ending spot for this because we've been talking about whether it be being in debt or saving money mm-hmm. or how we handle our finances. But this one is about investing in God's kingdom. And so how can our investments reflect our commitment to God's kingdom? And so I think where you spend your time is where your heart is, right? Yeah. It's where your interests are. And so a study shows that only about 57% of adults in the United States are considered financially literate with a basic understanding of financial principles and concepts. That seems high.
That's what I was just thinking.
It's probably because of the boomers out there. I'm a Gen X, so you know we drink from garden hoses and eat jelly beans. But boomers are probably helping that number at 57%. Because my father-in-law, very meager salary growing up, but he did a decent job of trying to invest and grow. I remember he was like, you know, oh man, I've unlocked it, right?
I found the magic stock.
Right. I just buy blue chips. Okay. Well, and that's probably a good, you know, buy Coke and Apple and all the rest of those kind. They're probably going to go up over time, you know? Yeah. But he did good. He did well over the years. Mm-hmm. But I would imagine that, and I've heard people talk about this before, that there should be things like taught in high school and college of doing your taxes, managing a budget. I mean, there used to be things like economics and
it's like home ec.
Home ec kind of thing. And a little more how to run a household and that kind of thing. That's out the door because we're like so low in science and math. We're like, we can't focus on living.
That Pythagorean theorem ain't going to learn itself.
Right. So I think maybe spending some time learning some basic financial principles would help. But also focusing on how we can grow the kingdom.
Yes.
And it definitely is beyond what we give. God is not limited by, I can only give $5. That's great. That $5 may lead someone to Christ with the what God turns that into. So choosing some good investments to honor God, I think, giving to your local church, you know, the dirty truth about nonprofits. Here we go. It takes money to run a nonprofit. I know you're like, what, TJ? It's not run on chickens and goodwill. No, it's not. It takes money to obviously afford this podcast equipment and your mortgage for your church and the staff that preaches every week and serves and all that. Supporting your local church is probably one of the best things you can do with your tithing that I can think of.
Yeah. With when it comes to tithing, you know, the Lord called us to give 10% before all else. But I do think that I'd want to challenge you a little further to also serve in some capacity.
Yes.
Because that, I think, really helps you, one, see where your finances are going in the church, showing, you know, getting a look behind that curtain to see, okay, where is the financial, you know, heart of this church? Is it in missions? Is it in local outreach? You know, is it, you know, in studies being created, whatever the case may be? But I think that also can help really, you know, open up your heart in that capacity to see, sure, really the lifeblood that is your local church. And because it's really easy to walk in and out of your church on Sunday and not think about it a second time in the entire week until it comes right back around to Sunday, and you don't walk up, wake up early and be upset about it that you got to work the next day. So
you're like, somebody's paying this bill, right? I mean, the lights are on, so I guess, you know, well, what else somebody's doing? They don't need my money.
That I think is the ideal example of the mindset most people have. Mm. Someone else will be able to front that bill.
Sure.
And I challenge you to be the person that does that, to front the bill.
Be that guy.
To handle that financially, or to step up and, you know, see where you need to be used in the church, whether it's leading a small group, if you can do that, if it's something as simple as greeting people at the welcome desk. There's always, you know, we are called to be the hands and the feet of the body of Christ.
Right.
And you cannot do that just sitting in the pew, enjoying the AC, and then going back home to watch football at the end of the day.
The topic of this segment was called Investing in God's Kingdom. Notice that we've quickly moved into, well, serving doesn't require any money.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to go serve at a food bank or a homeless shelter, your local church, a crisis pregnancy center, whatever. We even have volunteers who write for Uncommon. Mm. It does not require you to always give money.
Mm.
That's probably the easiest of the. It's sacrificing your time is the one of the most valuable things you can sacrifice, because that you'll never get back.
Yeah.
But, you know, missions, your local church, even Uncommon. I know it's hard to imagine, but even online ministries, and there's a ton of them out there, and we're just one of many. But there's a need for that as well. And so there's ways to grow God's kingdom, and the impact of our investments reach far beyond the end of our hand, right? Mm-hmm. Our reach exceeds our grasp, as the statement says. And so I know, and I'll speak from Uncommon, or maybe from a church standpoint that I know of,
mm-hmm.
that when you give, like say you give toward a missionary trip, and that team goes to a small village somewhere, South America, Africa, Russia, wherever, right? And they help a small village, they may build a school, a hospital, whatever it is, you could see that your service, your investment has impacted someone clear around the world. And so from an Uncommon standpoint, we feel that when we encourage and challenge men, we help them in their walk.
Mm.
We help them in their families, their jobs, in their communities. And so that circle starts to grow, and every man that we do that with, these circles start to overlap and then connect, and on. We, you know, I was just contacted this morning by a gentleman in Fargo, North Dakota. He is a teacher and a coach, and he's looking to start a small group to help young men be the men of God that he's always called to be. I mean, how awesome is that?
Yeah.
So you could see that it does not take $100 a week.
Mm.
The statement is, many hands make light work. So your church, whatever nonprofit that you are supporting, treasures and appreciates your support.
Yeah.
Whether it's $10, like we mentioned, our $10 challenge, is $10 going to pay for everything? Absolutely not.
Mm.
But 3,000 men giving $10 once this year would pay for a lot.
Right.
Go a long way. And after coming out of 2023, where I think all nonprofits, boy, took it on the chin,
mm-hmm.
that would go a long way. So And that's something that to think about, that it's not always about giving money. It could be time, encouragement, prayer. I mean, there's ways that we can invest in God's kingdom. But I think one of the hardest ones tend to be money and time.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think that because we talked about in the previous one about money being this kind of like sensitive topic, that it becomes like, well, we don't want to talk about it, therefore I'm not going to do anything about it. Or someone else confront the bill, like I said sure. earlier. So, you know, really, I think really searching your heart where God is calling you to give and in what ways, and having that be how you move forward with that, because you may have an amazing talent, like you're amazing on the cello, and the church requires you for the singing service or the ministry.
Oh, I love cello. you said cello. Gotcha. Yeah. Okay, gotcha.
Or maybe you're really talented with younger kids, and you go work in the student ministry, or whatever the case may be. And we all have a calling in some capacity or other, whether it is to give financially or to offer our talent or even time. So just really taking the time to really hone in and pray and search your heart to find out, you know, where God's calling you to serve in, whether it's your church or nonprofit or even, you know, your neighborhood. I mean, we talk a lot about giving sure. time and money to churches and stuff, but, you know, where we are the body of Christ.
Sure.
And that starts in your home and radiates outward. So, you know, maybe that's extending a hand to your elderly neighbor that needs help with something, or, you know, bringing food or a welcome gift to the new couple in your neighborhood. So you're really looking to where God can use you in those areas of time, talent, and treasure to glorify Him, right. whether it's in the confines of the church walls or outside.
I remember before the family who lives there across the street from us now, which are the awesome couple, Ronnie, the people that lived before, about the same age, and they must have gotten, like, I don't know, mulch or something dropped in their yard, big pile of it. And so there was the dad, looks like he's probably in his 30s maybe, and his young boy trying to help out. Looked like he was around like 8 kind of thing. So I just finished cutting grass or whatever. So I went to the garage, got a shovel, and I walked over across the street, and I just started shoveling mulch into the wheelbarrow kind of thing. They looked at me like I had just landed in an alien ship. And what in the world? So we filled, like, I don't know, 5 or 6 wheelbarrows. The guy took it kind of thing. We finished, and I said, well, have a great day, guys. They never said a word. They never said a word to me. They didn't, like, you know, introduce themselves or, oh, thanks for your help, or what are you doing? Get off my property. Whatever. Mm. Nothing. Where that took it from there, I don't know.
Yeah.
But again, we see that it's a heart condition. You know, we won't be able to do this. It's about balancing earthly wealth and eternal treasures. Mm. We won't be able to do this without the help of the Holy Spirit.
Yes.
And we need a godly counsel on how we manage our finances and our time, how we are used to grow God's kingdom. And sometimes He is going to require us to give, because He knows that's the thing we may treasure most.
Yeah.
And it needs to come from God, not someone else. I think that you won't be able to get there by someone prodding you to give. No matter how much we encourage you to do so, it's up to you
right.
to do this. And you won't be able to go, you know, who are you to tell me to spend my money on, right? You know, like, so if you start praying about that and God leads you to do that, I think that's a heart change that leads to the other things we've been talking about in the podcast. You know, if you and I start to change how we invest ourselves, starting with the kingdom of God, I think it will lead to a better decision when it comes to whatever it is, and this topic just happens to be finances. Mm-hmm. So I think our verse as we wrap up our podcast is Matthew 6:20.
But lay up for yourselves treasure in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal.
Man, I'll use that statement from the A-Team. I love it when a plan comes together. It's almost like we scripted this to work out like this. It's crazy. I hope you guys have been enjoying our podcast. We've been trying to do some longer pieces with more segments that you can just kind of tune into. Our content of 2024 is going to be 2 articles and 2 podcasts a month. So we hope you enjoy that. I think we'll pick a new topic every month that's related. I promise that April will not be focused on finances. We'll be focused on Easter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
That makes sense, right? So, well, thanks for tuning in today, guys. Be sure to check out uncommon.org. Sign up for the newsletter and see all the resources we have for you. And if you're going to be something, be uncommon.